as we gather around the written word and listen to the spoken word, may we meet with the living word, Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Could we have our first slide, please, Steve? I wonder if anybody remembers these. Perhaps you had one, or your children, or your grandchildren. Anyone going to own up?
Me. I had wallpaper.
You had the wallpaper. Now, brothers and sisters, I have two confessions to make this morning. The first is that I thought Care Bears were a thing of the past. No, but when I Googled to find a picture of them, it became apparent there were some pictures of some very old vintage Care Bears, but there were also like new ones. You can still buy them things. Who knew? The second confession is that when I was searching for images of this, typed into Google, the first time I made an error. Could we have our second slide, please, Steve? This is not a Care Bear. This is a car bear. Has nothing to do with the sermon, but it amused me. Probably not the owner of the car, but there you go. Anyway, let's have the Care Bears back, Steve. So why am I going on about Care Bears? Well, this term, as we've said, we're spending our Sunday mornings finding out a bit about what life was like in the early church for the Christians in Jerusalem and the surrounding areas directly after Jesus had returned to heaven, and what we might learn from that about our life together as a church family, as congregations. Previous weeks, we've explored what it means to be a worshipping church and a baptizing church. This week, we're thinking about being a caring church, well done, which goes together really nicely with a sharing church, which is our theme for next week for our Harvest Festival. Now, this idea of being a caring church is one that's central to our core values here at All Saints, of being a church that loves each other and loves our neighbours. Because it seems to me we can't love people without caring for them. And we can't care for people if we don't love them. Caring is the practical expression of love. Caring is love in action. And it seems to me that we see that in our Bible readings this morning. And the first is that well-known story we've heard a couple of times of four friends bringing somebody to Jesus. I'm not going to spend ages on this, but I'd like to bring a couple of things out by thinking about some of the characters in the story and asking, what do they care about? This can be an interesting way of getting into a Bible story, kind of looking at the characters and thinking, what do they care about? So firstly, what do the man's friends care about? The man's friends cared for him. And they demonstrated this care by bringing him to Jesus. Now, here's an interesting little thing for you to think on. Whose faith is it that Mark said Jesus saw before he forgave the man? It was the faith of the friends. That's what it says. Mark is silent about the faith of the man. It says Jesus saw their faith and forgave the man. Isn't that interesting? The friends showed their care for the man by exercising their faith in a practical way. They didn't just say they believed Jesus could do something good for him. They demonstrated their faith by bringing him. So that's one of the things the man's friends cared about. What did Jesus care about? Well, Jesus cared for the man as well. And he showed this by forgiving him and healing him. But notice the order. And Bob Hartman, in the poetry version of it, brought this out as well. I don't know about you, but if I brought someone who was paralyzed to Jesus, I think I'd be up on the roof going, yes, that's all very nice forgiving him, but what about his legs? You see, Jesus did care about the man's physical healing, but his priority was the man's soul. Was he right with God? That's what Jesus' priority was. That's what he really cared about. And my experience is sometimes when we bring people to God in faith, God doesn't always do what we expect. God's priorities aren't always our priorities. And thirdly, what did the religious people care about? The religious folk, they cared about something, but it wasn't the person in front of them. They cared about the religious rules. Who was allowed to forgive whom? And it seems to me that this caring about the rules actually stopped them caring about the man who was in front of them. I wonder what we care about. As we continue to ponder this story, I wonder how it might change what we care about. And what about our Acts reading? Our little glimpse into the life of the early church. I've just realised I've forgotten a slide, haven't I? I have. Should we have a little look at there? Oh, look, there's some people bringing someone to Jesus. Some little Lego people. Yeah, go on. Oh, there we are. Thank you. Our little glimpse into the life of the early church. These six verses, they turn life upside down, don't they? There's so much practical love and caring here. It's almost impossible to imagine what it actually looked like. There are signs and wonders, which surely would have included people being healed as they prayed for each other. The believers held things in common. When one person had a need and another person had the means of meeting it, they sold what they had and met that need, even to the extent of selling land and property. They met together, they shared meals together, they prayed and praised together. All this mutual care and affection and love. It's practical love in action. It is caring and sharing. And we're going to be focusing on that sharing element in Harvest next week. But what about that other side? The other side, the sharing of life side of caring. What might that look like in our church life? We do live in a different time, a different culture, a different context, and that might tempt us to explain this away as not really practical for today, not realistic. Maybe it's just too difficult. And to be fair, the reality we discover as we read through the book of Acts is that it didn't always work out that well in practice then either, to be fair. In Acts 5, we read of Ananias and Sapphira, who weren't entirely convinced by the hold everything in common thing. They lied about what they'd been contributing to the common purse, and it didn't end well for them. In Acts 6, we read of disputes breaking out in the growing church about a lack of fairness in the distribution of food to the widows. And in a number of Paul's letters, we read him having to persuade and encourage churches in one city to send support to poorer fellowships in other cities. So, the early church didn't always perfectly put into practice what they aspired to. After all, it was made up of people. But I don't think that should stop us aspiring to the same things they aspired to. Love in action. Caring for each other. In his first letter, one of Jesus' closest friends and followers, John, he wrote this. If any one of you has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in you? Dear children, let us love not with words or tongues, but with actions and truth. Now, my sense is actually, we're not bad at this. In fact, we're pretty good. I see so much generosity of time, of love, of care, of affection, of attention, of relationships in the life of our community. We say that we value loving each other and our neighbours, and as vicar, I probably am in the I see more of it than anybody else because I'm in a massively privileged position of knowing all the stuff that goes on. And in a moment, I'd like to share just a few of them with you so that we can celebrate them together. But before I do that, I do want to acknowledge that we don't always get this right. I don't always get it right. You might be sitting here this morning feeling, Tim's going on about being caring, but actually I'm angry, I'm upset because I haven't received the care that I needed when I was hurting, when I was grieving. And if that's you this morning, I want to say sorry. I'm sorry that we've let you down. I'm sorry that I've let you down. Not to put pressure on you and make you feel worse, but if you feel able, please do get in touch with me so that we can change what we do so that others don't get left out in the same way in future. I know we don't always get this right. You might also be sitting here thinking, you know what, I really could do with some help, but I'm a bit embarrassed. I don't know who to ask. I don't know if I can ask. And I want to assure you that if you get in touch with me directly through your small group leader or however, requests for help are handled with discretion and care, whether it's emotional, spiritual, financial support, whatever it is, whatever care you need, there's help available. And we will aim to do all that we can to support you in a way that empowers you. You don't need to be ashamed or embarrassed. But as I said, I think there are things we can celebrate in our common life. I've just got a few examples of what I see happening in our life, which we can celebrate and join in with as we care for each other. Today is Luncheon Sunday, for instance, when folk in the church open their homes to those who would normally eat alone at Sunday lunchtime. It's very simple, a loving, practical way to express love and care through hospitality and sharing life. To be entirely honest, it's probably a bit late to get involved this month, but if you'd like to be part of it in the future, either as a host or as a guest, talk to me, talk to Linda. Where's Linda? Linda's waving. She'd love to talk to you. And do you know what? You don't have to wait to Luncheon Sunday to invite someone round for a meal. It is allowed just to say, oh, would you like to come round for lunch? Perhaps somebody you don't know that well, or a new face. Now, I don't know if you've noticed. I suspect it's one of the things that's on every week, and so it doesn't get noticed so much. But have you ever noticed on the notices every week, there's this bit which tells you all the Bible readings for the week, yeah? And here it says prayer, yeah? And it says All Saints Prayer Network. To request prayer, email prayer@allsaints-wellington.org. Who knew it was there? It's there every week. There's a group of folk out there who are committed to pray for them. And what happens is this ends up with me, and then I send it round them, and they all pray. Isn't that brilliant? Who knew? If you'd like to be part of this, if you'd like to commit to pray for people, to show your care for them by praying for them, just let me know. In fact, just email this and say, I'd like to be on the prayer network, and I'll add you to the list for when they come round. If there's something you would like someone to pray for you for, it doesn't have to be a massive thing, whatever it is, just drop me an email using this email address. I'll circulate, we'll pray for you. And then, when the prayer is answered, let us know and then we can feed it back and we can encourage each other by seeing how God is answering prayer in our church family as we care for each other and pray for each other. To be honest, I feel like I could go on all morning about Oasis Lunch, which was this week, the Bowls Club, which is starting up again in October, check the notices, our small groups, the Pastoral Care Team, which met this week, the Pastoral and Care Hospitality Team, Action Group, which is meeting next week, all the informal things that I see of people loving and caring for each other. I could go on all morning. To be honest, I'd still miss some. There's a lot to celebrate here. There's a lot to get involved in. There's a lot to access if you feel like you need support. There's one more initiative that I would like to highlight, though, this morning, because I know that it impacts so many of us in so many different ways and so many out in our community. And this initiative is our initiative to be a dementia-friendly church. Jill Reeves and Rose Kershaw, I'm really grateful to have taken the lead on this. And if you want to know more about it, do talk to them. They've helped us to be more aware of the ways in which we can support those living with dementia. One of the resources they've pointed me towards is a series of videos made by a Christian family in our diocese about their journey with their dad in his dementia. And I'd like to share one of these videos with you, partly because it seems to me such a really good example of practical care, and one actually that does have applications when we're living with dementia, but also, as you'll see, it talks about the importance of the heart over the head and of being sensitive to feelings rather than to fact. And it seems to me that actually those have wider applications in the way we care for each other in our relationships. As I said, this is one of a series, and I'm going to post the link to the series on our Facebook page later today if you'd like to see more of them. There's a book referenced also in this video, and there is a copy at the back if you'd like to borrow it from the church library. So let's watch this just to, as a practical example of how we can put some of these things into practice.
The big starting point from which everything else followed was moving from head-level communication to heart-level understanding. And we had to let go of the rational and move from focusing on facts to recognising feelings. In one area of the brain, facts, rational language and communication were becoming increasingly damaged. But in a different part of the brain, feelings remain intact if we could only access them. So our communication with Theo shifted more and more dramatically over time from head level to heart level. And some of our happiest moments were all about feelings and nothing much else, with shared laughter, even sometimes when we didn't know precisely what the joke was.
We drew inspiration from Maya Angelou's great quote, "People forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel."
We found the book Contented Dementia really helpful in learning to move from facts to feelings, including three invaluable rules. The first rule, don't ask questions. Questions focus on information, so they can create anxiety about whether or not the person knows the right answer. So instead of saying, "What did you do this morning?" we found it might be more helpful to come in with a more general comment, perhaps, "I wonder if it's been a busy morning." And the second rule, don't contradict. It just undermines someone's confidence if you keep telling them they're wrong, and it'll only cause additional stress to everyone. And the third rule is learn from the expert, the person with dementia. Just watch someone's eyes and you can pick up whether things are connecting.
So when Theo said to me, in fact on the doorstep just as I was leaving, he said, "We've known each other for a long time, are you older than me?" And strange question, I could have corrected and contradicted him, responding at a head level, saying, "Of course I'm not older than you, you're my dad." Or I could have asked another question back, "I'm 56, how old are you?" But instead, I wanted to just affirm the feeling of connection, that the heart level response, and so I said, "We're great friends. I've known you all my life." So I wanted to affirm the connection. Similarly, when Theo asked my brother, Andrew, "Are your parents still alive?" Andrew's heart level reply was, "Oh yes, they're very much alive." These conversations don't really focus on the facts or the information. They're heart to heart, not head to head. They help recognise and reassure, prompting really positive affirmation rather than more anxiety.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I think some real wisdom there, not just in how we communicate those with those with dementia, but how we show care, focusing on how we're making people feel. That heart-to-heart communication of affirmation. Because that's how God communicates with us. God's heart, communicating with our heart of his love and affection and care for us. And as we learn to communicate in that way with others, so we will truly live out those values of loving each other, loving our neighbours in deep care. Amen.